driving them to destroy. But the Termagants knew nothing but the lust to rip and rend. Like everything in their arsenal, the weapons used by the warriors were living things. Their flesh borers, great bell-mouthed flutes of chitin, spat clumps of fang-toothed beetles that chewed through armor and flesh in destructive frenzy. Numberless and unstoppable, the brood swallowed up Kore and Seela, opening them to the air in jets of red. Dane was the last to fall, his legs cut out from under him, his bolter running dry, becoming a club in his mailed fists. At the end of him, a storm of tusk blades pierced his torso, penetrating his lungs, his primary and secondary hearts. Blood flooded his mouth, and he perished in silence, his last act to deny the creatures the victory of his screams. Brother Nord stumbled and fell to one knee, clutching at his chest in sympathetic agony. He felt Dane perish in his thoughts, heard the echo of the warrior's death and that of Kore and Seera. Each man's ending struck him like a slow bullet, filling his gut with ice. He became aware of Brother Sergeant Kale helping him to his feet, dimly registering his squad commander guiding him away from the hibernaculum chamber and into the flesh-warm humidity of the corridor beyond.
Nord, speak to me!
He tried to answer, but the psychic undertow dragged on him, taking all his effort just to stay afloat and sensate. The shocking resonance was far worse than he had ever felt before. There had been many times upon the field of combat where Nord had tasted the mind death of others, sometimes his foes, too often his battle brothers. But this was of a very different stripe. At once alien and human, unknowable and yet known to him, the psychic force that had compelled the Termagant swarm reached in and raked frigid claws over the surface of his mind. A part of him screamed that he should withdraw, disengage, and erect the strongest of his mental barriers. And yet, another facet of Nord's iron will dared to face this power head-on, driven by the need to know it and destroy it. Against the sickness he felt within, Nord tried to see the face of his enemy. The mental riposte was powerful. It hit him like a wall, and he recoiled, his vision hazed crimson. With a monumental psychic effort, Nord disengaged and slumped against a bony stanchion, his dark skin sallow and filmed with sweat. Kale's pale face was grave in the dimness.
The others?
He whispered.
Dead, Nord managed. All dead.
The sergeant gave a grim nod.
The Emperor knows their names.
He hesitated a moment.
You felt it? With your witch sight, you saw the enemy?
Aye.
The Psyker got to his feet.
It tried to kill me. Didn't take.
Kale stood, drumming his fingers on the hilt of his chainsword.
This force that assaulted you?
He shook his head.
I've never sensed the like before, sir.
Do you know where it is?
The veteran gestured around at the walls with the chainsword. Nord nodded.
That I do know.
He heard the hunter's smile in the sergeant's voice.
Show me.
At the heart of every Tyranid nest, one breed of creature was supreme. If the Carnifexes and Termagants, Ripper Swarms and Biovores were the teeth and talons of the Tyranid mass, then the commanding intellect was the Hive Tyrant. None had ever been captured alive, and few had been recovered by the Imperium intact enough for a full dissection. If a tyrant was awake aboard this vessel, then none of them were safe.
It's not a Tyranid,
husked Nord.
The thought pattern I sensed, it wasn't the same as the Lictors.
He paused.
At least, not in whole.
Kale eyed him.
Explain, brother. Your gift is a mystery to me. I do not understand.
The mind that touched my thoughts, that rallied the creatures who attacked us. It is neither human nor Xenos.
The sergeant halted.
A demon.
He said the word like a curse. Nord shook his head.
I do not sense the taint of chaos here, sir. This is different.
Even as the words fell from his lips, the Psyker felt the change in the air around them. The wet, damp atmosphere grew sullen and greasy, setting a sickly churn deep in his belly. Kale felt it too, even without the Codicia's preternatural senses. The sergeant drew his chainsword and brandished it before him, his thumb resting on the weapon's activation stud. A robed figure, there, in the dimness. Perhaps a man, it advanced slowly towards them, feet dragging as if wounded. And then a voice, brittle and cracked.
Me,
rasped the newcomer.
You sense me, Astartes.
The figure moved at the very edge of the dull light from the lamp beetles. Nord's eyes narrowed. Threads of clothing, cables perhaps, seemed to trail behind the man away into the dark. Kale aimed his gun.
In the Emperor's name, identify yourself or I will kill you where you stand.
Hands opened in a gesture of concession.
I do not doubt you already know who I am.
He bowed slightly, and Nord saw cords snaking along his back.
My name is Heraclite Indus, adept and savant, former Magos Biologis Minoris of the Adeptus Mechanicus.
Former?
Echoed Kale. Indus's shadowed head bobbed.
Oh, yes. I attend a new master now. Let me introduce you to him.
The strange threads pulled taut and lifted Indus off his feet, to dangle as a marionette would hang from the hands of a puppeteer. A shape that dwarfed him lumbered out of the black, drawing into the pool of light. White as bleached bone, crested with purple-black patches of armor shell, it bent to fit its bulk inside the close quarters of the hibernacular. A hive tyrant in all its obscene glory. Two of its four arms were withered and folded to its torso, the pearlescent surface of their claws cracked and fractured. The other arms ended in ropey whips of sinew that threaded across the floor and into the adept's flayed spine, glittering wetly where bone was revealed beneath his torn robes. And yet, the towering tyrannid's breathing was labored and rough, and from its eye spots, its great fanged jaws, its fleshy throat sacs, thin yellow pus oozed over crusted scabs. A stinking haze of necrotic decay issued from it. Nord had tasted the scent of death enough times to know that this alien beast was mortally wounded.
What have you done, Indus?
Demanded Kale, his face twisted in disgust.
Neither human nor Xenos.
Nord repeated his earlier statement, the words suddenly snapping into hard focus. With a whip-crack thought, he sent a savage mental probe towards the adept. Indus spun to face him with a glare, and the telepathic feint was deflected easily. The adept nodded slowly.
Yes, Blood Angel, we are the same. Both blessed with witch sight. Both psychers.
Indus cocked his head.
Zeren never told you. How like him.
No matter,
growled Kale. Without hesitation, the sergeant opened fire and Nord followed suit, both space marines turning their weapons on the ugly, abhorrent pairing. The hive tyrant shifted, drawing Indus close in a gesture of protection, shielding the adept from the bolt rounds that whined off its chitinous armor. Its head lolled back and a high screech issued from between its teeth. In reply, there were hoots and howls from all around the Astartes. In moments, sphinctered rents in the hibernacular walls drew open, spilling dozens of mucus-slicked hormigons into the chamber. The chattering beasts rose up in a wave, and the Blood Angels went to their blades. Kale's chainsword brayed as it chewed through bone. Nord's force axe cut lightning flash arcs into meat as barbed grasping claws dragged them down. Nord caught a telepathic spark as blood from a cut gummed shut his right eye. He drew up his mental shields just as the Hive Tyrant released a scream of psychic energy upon them. The wave of pain blasted across the chamber, and the Codicia saw his battle brother stumble, clutching his hands to his head in agony. Nord fared little better, the Tyranid's telepathic onslaught sending him spinning. For long moments he waited for death to fall upon him, for the mass of Hormagons to take the opportunity to rip him apart. But they did not. Instead, the hissing monsters retreated, forming into a wall before the Space Marines, shielding Indus and the Tyrant. Nord went to Kale and helped him to his feet. The sergeant had lost his bolter in the melee, and he still shook from the after-effect of the psychic scream.
"We could have killed you,"
said Indus.
"We chose not to."
"You speak for the Xenos now,"
spat Nord. Indus gave a crooked smile.
"A soldier's limited mindset. I had hope for better from one with the sight."
He came forward, the shuffling Tyrant at his back.
"I found this creature near death, you understand. Too weak to fight me. I pushed in, touched its thoughts."
The Adept gave a gasp of pleasure.
"And what I saw there, such riches. The knowledge of flesh and bone. More than the scribes of the Magos biologists could ever hope to learn. Race memory, Astartes. Millions of years of it to drink in."
"Fool," replied the Blood Angel. "The creature is near death. It used what strength it had to lure you in, placed you in its thrall. It uses you like it uses these mindless predators."
He gestured at the Hormagons.
"You are so wrong,"
Indus retorted.
"I have control here. I spared your lives."
"I?"
snapped Kale.
"A moment ago you said we. Which is it?"
"The hive answers to me,"
he shouted, the warrior creatures howling in empathy.
"I gave myself to the merging, and now see what I have at my hands."
Indus drew in a rattling breath.
"That is why Zeren sent you here. He is like you, afraid, jealous of what we are."
"The priest knew of this,"
hissed Kale. Indus chuckled.
"Zeren saw it happen. He fled. He sent you to find us, praying you would destroy us so his cadre could take this hive for itself."
Nord nodded to himself.
"Aboard a ship filled with killing machines, a deed only Astartes could do."
"You've seen the power of these creatures,"
said the Adept.
"This is only a tiny measure of what the swarm is capable of."
He extended a skeletal cybernetic arm towards the Psyker.
"There is such majesty here. Red in tooth and claw, Blood Angel. Come see it. Join me."
New, fang-mouthed tentacles issued forth from the Tyrant's stunted arms, questing towards the Codicius. His eyes narrowed, and with one sweeping blow, Brother Nord sliced down with his axe, severing the probing limbs in a welter of acidic blood. The Tyrant screamed and rocked backward.
"A grave mistake,"
snarled Indus.
"You have no idea what you have denied yourself."
"I know full well," came the reply. "My blood stays pure, by the Emperor's grace and the might of Sanguinius. You have willingly defiled yourself, debased your humanity. For that, there can be no forgiveness."
"We are not monsters,"
shouted Indus, amid his howling chorus.
"You are the destroyers, the disunited, the infection. You are the hate, the rage, and the thirst."
Too late. Nord's mind sensed the build of warp energy once more, resonating between the Tyrant and the Mechanicus Psyker. Too late, the cold understanding reached him.
"No,"
he breathed, staggering backwards.
"No,
Nord!"
The question on Brother Kale's lips was suddenly ripped away by a new, thunderous shockwave of dark power. Perhaps it was the Hive Tyrant, with its hate for all things alien to it. Perhaps it was Indus in his crazed fury. Whatever the origin, the burning blade of madness swept across the Blood Angels and ripped open their minds. Nord held on to the ragged edge of the abyss, as once more the red and black clouds enveloped him. The dream. The vision in his roaring heart was upon him, his moment of foresight damning and terrifyingly real. The strength of the psychic blast tore away any self-control, burning down to the most base, most monstrous instincts a man could conceal. And for an Adeptus Astartes of the Blood Angels chapter, the fall to such madness was damning. The gene curse. The flaw. The red thirst's wild and insatiable desire for blood. The black rage's uncontrollable berserker insanity. These were the twin banes Nord fought to endure. Fought and held against. Fought and finally resisted. But Brother Sergeant Brennan Kale had none of the Caduceus' psychic bulwarks. His naked mind absorbed the power of the tyrant's fury and fell. The man that Nord's comrade had been was gone. In his place was a beast clothed in his flesh. Kale threw himself at the Caduceus, his chainsword discarded and forgotten, hands in claws, his mouth wide to release a bellow of pure anger. The Blood Angel's fangs glittered in the light, and darkness filled his vision. Kale's mailed fists rained blow after blow upon Nord's battle armor, the crimson tint of fury in the sergeant's aura stifling him. He cried out the other man's name, desperately trying to reach through the fog of madness, but to no avail. Nord fought to block the impacts as they struggled against one another, locked in close combat. He could not bring himself to hit back. His skull rang with each strike, his vision blurring. There was no doubt that Kale could kill him. He had little choice. If he could not end this madness quickly, Kale would tear open his throat and drink deep. He glimpsed a rent in Kale's armor, a deep gouge that had penetrated the ceramite sheath. "Brother," he whispered, "forgive me." Nord's hand closed around the hilt of his combat blade, turning the fractal-edged knife about. Without pause, he buried it deep in his old friend's chest, down to the hilt. The blade penetrated plasteel, flesh, and muscle. It punctured Kale's primary heart, and the veteran's back arched in a spasm of agony. Nord let him fall, and the other man dropped to the bony deck, pain racking him, robbing him of his rage. Blue sparks gathering around the crystal matrix of his psychic hood, Nord turned and found his force axe, sweeping it up to aim at Indus.
"You will pay in kind for this, adept," he snarled. "Know that, in the name of holy terror, you will pay."
Nord closed his eyes and let the power flow into him, channeling the might of heroes through his bones, through his very soul itself. He unleashed his telepathic might through the force axe. The blast turned the air into smoke and battered away the Xenos beasts, sending them shrieking into the dark. Indus bellowed in pain as his flesh was racked with agony, and the tyrant hooted in synchrony with him. It took unbearable minutes for the psychic blast to dissipate, for the adept's crooked mind to shake off the aftershock. Finally, through the myriad senses of the howling, confused tyrannids, he saw only the scorched bone deck of the hibernacula. The Astartes were gone. With Kale's body across his shoulder, Brother Nord ran as swiftly as the bulk of his battle armor would allow, always onward, never looking back. Nord could feel Indus reaching out, probing the hive ship for him, drawing more and more of the sleeping Xenos from their hibernation with each passing moment. The Psyker understood a measure of what had transpired here. Indus, or the Hive Tyrant, or whatever unholy fusion of the two now existed, must have sensed him for the very first time as the Emathia made its approach. He suppressed a shudder. It wanted him. It wanted to engulf him, subsume him into that same horrific unity. Nord spat in loathing. Perhaps a weakling mind, a man like the bio-adept, perhaps he might have fallen to such a thing. But Nord was a blood angel, an Adeptus Astartes, the finest warrior humanity had ever created. Whatever dark fate awaited him, his duty came before them all. His duty.
Brother.
He heard the voice as they came to the chamber where the boarding torpedo had made its breach. Nord lowered his comrade to the ground, and he saw the light of recognition in the sergeant's eyes. The force of mind Indus had turned on Kale was, at least for the moment, dispelled.
What did I do?
Kale's voice was a gasp, thick with blood and recrimination.
The Xenos?
They're close, he replied. We have little time.
Kale saw Nord's dagger deep in his chest and gave a ragged chuckle.
Should I thank you for this?
The Psyker dragged the injured warrior into the boarding capsule, ignoring the question.
You will heal, sir. Your body's implants are already destroying infection, repairing your wounds.
He stood up and punched a series of commands into a control panel. Kale's pale face darkened.
Wait. What are you doing?
Nord didn't meet his gaze.
Indus will find us again soon enough. He must be dealt with.
Kale tried to lift himself off the deck, ignoring the pain of his bloody scars, but the acid burn of Tyranid venom in his flesh left him gasping, shaking with pain.
You can't go back. Not alone.
The other warrior reached into a weapons locker, searching for something.
I beg to differ, sir. I am the only one who can go back. This enemy has already claimed the lives of 3 Blood Angels. There must be payment for that cost.
He glanced at the veteran.
And Zaren's perfidy cannot stand unchallenged.
Through his blurred vision, the sergeant saw the Codicia gather a gear pack to him, saw him slam a fresh clip of bolt shells into his weapon.
Nord,
he growled.
You will stand down.
The Psyker hesitated at the airlock, looking back into the gloom of the hive ship beyond.
I regret I cannot obey you, brother. Forgive me.
Without another word, Nord stepped through, letting the brass leaves of the hatch close behind him. Then the razor cogs began to turn, the boarding torpedo drawing back into the void amid gushes of outgassing air. Fuming, Kale dragged himself to the viewport, a trail of dark blood across the steel deck behind him, in time to see the hive ship's hull falling away. Nord threw himself into the melee, Stormbolter crashing, his force axe a spinning cascade of psychic fury.
Indus,
he cried.
I am here. Face me if you dare.
Nord became a whirlwind of blade and shell, deep in the mad glory of combat. His body sang with pain from lacerations, toxins, and impacts. But still, he fought on, bolstering himself with the power of his own psionic quickening. The shadows of the rage and the thirst were there at his back, reaching for him, ready to take him, and he raced to stay one step ahead. He could not be consumed, not yet. His heavy burden rattled against his chest plate. Soon, he told himself, sensing the red and the black. Very soon. Crossing the bone bridge once more, he shouted his defiance, and the Tyranids replied in kind. Winged fiends and fluttering gas-filled spores fell around him, the gargoyle broods tearing through the air, daring him to attack. He unloaded the Stormbolter, tracer shells cutting magnesium-bright flashes in the dark. But for each he killed, there were 5 more, 10 more, 20. The spores detonated in fetid coughs of combustion, and without warning, the bridge was severed. Nord fell, his weapons lost, down into the pit where the Carnifex lurked. Impact came hard and suffocating as the Blood Angel sank into a drift of soft, doughy matter collecting around the hive's egg sacs. Tearing the sticky strings of albumen from his armor, he tore free and faced his foe.
You should have fled while you had the chance.
Indus's voice had taken on a fly-swarm buzz. Flanked by mammoth, thorn-backed beasts, the hive tyrant bowed as if mocking him, allowing Indus to dangle before Nord upon his tendrils. The aliens waited to taste the stink of his fear, savoring the moment. Nord gave them nothing, instead bending to recover his axe where it had fallen.
This will be your end, adept, he said. If only you could see what you have become.
We are the superior,
came the roar in return.
We will devour all. You are the prey! You are the beasts!
Nord took a breath and let the dark clouds come.
Yes, he admitted. Perhaps we are.
The black rage and the red thirst, the curses that he had fought against for so long, the twin madnesses at the core of his being. The Psyker let his defenses fall before them. He gave himself fully to the heart of rage. Let it fill him. Power, burning, Nova bright, swept away every doubt, every question in his mind. Suddenly, it was so very clear to him. There was only the weapon and the target, the killer and the killed. The aliens charged, and Nord ripped open the gear pack at his belt, drawing the weapon within, running to meet them, racing towards the Hive Tyrant. Indus saw the lethal burden in the Blood Angel's hand and felt a cold blade of fear lance through him. The Tyrant shook in sympathetic panic.
No!
He husked.
In the name of Sanguinius and the God Emperor!
The Codicius snarled, baring his fangs.
I will end you all!
Captain Gorolev jerked up from the console, his expression set in fear.
The cogitators register an energetic increase aboard the hive ship.
Zeren's head turned to face him atop his snake-like neck.
I am aware.
Gorolev took a step towards the Mechanicus Magi.
We have completed recovery of the boarding torpedo, and your scouts are lost. We should destroy the Xenos. There is no reason to let them live a moment longer.
There is every reason.
Zeren's manner of cold, silky dismissal suddenly broke. He rounded on the frigate's commander, his mecha dendrites and cyber limbs rising up behind him in a fan, angry serpents hissing and snapping at the air.
You will do as I say, or your life will be forfeit.
You have no right.
Gorolev was cut off as Zeren reached out a hand, showing brass micro-lasers where fingers should have been.
That hive is worth more than your life, Captain. More than the lives of your worthless crew. More than the lives of Tail and his space marines. I will sacrifice every single one of you if that is what it will cost.
Gorolev's eyes widened, but not in fear of Zeren. He and his officers stared beyond the tech priest to the open hatchway behind him. There, filling the doorway, a figure clad in blood red. Zeren spun, his limbs, flesh and steel, coming up before him in a gesture of self-protection. Brother Sergeant Kale entered, carrying himself with a limp, his pale face stained with spilled vitae and smoke. His eyes were black with an anger as cold and vast as space.
My brothers lie dead,
he intoned.
The blame is yours.
I was not.
Zeren's cool reserve crumbled.
Do not cheapen their sacrifice with lies, priest,
growled Kale, his ire building ever higher as he came closer.
You sent us to our deaths, and you smiled as you did it.
Zeren stiffened, drawing himself up.
I only did what was needed. I did what was expected of me.
Yes.
Kale gave a slow nod and reached up to his chest, where the hilt of a combat knife protruded from a scabbed wound.
Now I do the same.
With a shout of rage and pain, Kale tore the knife free and swept it around in a fluid arc. The Blood Angel leaned into the attack and took Zeren's head from his neck. The cyborg's body danced and fell, crashing to the deck in a puddle of oil.
Energetic surge at criticality,
Gorolev reported, as alert chimes sounded from the cogitator console. Kale said nothing, only nodded. He stepped up to the viewport over Zeren's headless corpse and watched the hive ship. His hands drew up to his chest in salute, taking on the shape of the Imperial Aquila.
In his name, brother,
he whispered. He was falling. Somewhere, far beyond his thoughts in the world of meat and bone, he was dying. Claws tearing at him, serpentine tendrils cutting into him, cilia probing to find gray matter and absorb it. Nord fell into the cascade of sensation, the blood roaring through him, the flawless, diamond-hard perfection of his anger driving him on into the arms of the enemy. The clouds of billowing crimson, the swelling mist of deep, deep night. They came and took him, and he embraced it. Somewhere, far beyond his thoughts, a bloody, near-crippled hand curled about the grip of a weapon, tight upon a trigger. And with a breath, a slow and steady breath, that hand released. Let go. The fusion detonator Nord had recovered from the weapons locker, the secret burden he had carried back into the heart of the hive ship, now revealed, now empowered, and unleashed. And in that moment, as the light became all, in its heart, Brother Nord saw an angel, golden and magnificent, reaching for him, offering his hand, beckoning him towards honor and a death most worthy.
The Madness Within by Steve Lyons, performed by John Banks. This is a world without a name. Until recently, it was thought a dead lump of rock, drifting on the edge of the Loci system. But life does endure here. A lost tribe of man huddling in storm-lashed caves. Theirs is a hostile world, each dark dawn heralding a renewed onslaught from the unremitting elements. Few crops can grow here, and electrical death strikes from the skies without warning. It takes a special kind of man to survive on this world. And life, for these hardy few, is a war without prospect of an end. This world is an ideal breeding ground. The monastery was over 6 decades old, ancient by the standards of this world, and its Scythian builders had long since been forgotten, as had the false gods to whom their great work had been dedicated. In 60 years more, doubtless, the monastery would be gone too. Already its stone walls had been worn smooth, its crenellations almost flattened, and yet still the rain continued to beat upon it, as if the world itself wanted rid of this unnatural growth on its skin. Cordoba tried to filter out the crashing of the storm. He listened for the more subtle sounds within, for the scraping of a claw against the flagstone, perhaps, or the guttural snarl of a predator anticipating his next kill. His weapons were at the ready. He was flanked by 2 of his battle brothers, one of them the decorated Sergeant Esteban. Then searching the shadows of the monastery's torchlit passageways, searching for a demon. It had been just 3 years since these 3 had come here, since they had staked their claim on this building, on this world. To the people of the caves, they were the Emperor's angels, armored heralds of a new and more powerful god. They called themselves the Crimson Fists. But only a few short hours earlier, they had numbered 4 more. It attacked without warning. Even Cordova hadn't seen it in the shadows above the archway to the covered cloisters, despite his enhanced vision. It was as if the demon had been no more than a shadow itself, until its prey had ventured within striking distance. Three bolters barked and gouged great holes into the stone walls. It seemed that wherever their bolts impacted, the demon wasn't there. It alighted upon Menendez's bare head, and although it seemed only a slight thing itself, its weight made him grimace and bore him down onto one knee. Cordoba and Sergeant Esteban activated their chainswords, and Cordoba swung his in a vengeful downward arc. Somehow, the demon blurred and shifted from beneath him, and his blade bit into Menendez's shoulder guard instead, sparking in shrill protest. He felt an itch in his brain. He couldn't look at the demon directly. It was as if his eyes couldn't bear to see, as if his mind rejected its very presence in this world. Cordoba felt sick and dizzy by the utter wrongness of it. He had only a vague impression, therefore, of its shape, like a grotesque, elongated bat with a leathern hide and tattered wings folded behind its back. He was aware of its gnarled claws, pointed ears, and saliva-dripping fangs. And in his peripheral vision, he could see grey, malformed ribs protruding from the creature's chest. He aimed his next attack between those ribs, at where the demon's heart ought to have been. It evaded the blow with nimble ease, making Cordoba feel slow and clumsy. A second chainsaw thrust, and a third failed to find their mark too. Sergeant Esteban, it seemed, fared no better. He had fired his bolter three times at his slippery foe, from point-blank range, and each time somehow he had missed. His fourth bolt thudded into Cordoba's chestplate, leaving him bruised. For his part, Menendez had dropped his weapons and was attempting to tear the bat creature off his head. It slipped through his fingers, fluttered about his throat, and suddenly he was paralyzed. Even Menendez's face was frozen, eyes, bulging teeth clenched. And now he toppled forwards, a dead weight. The demon rode its prey to the ground, its claws sunk into Menendez's neck behind his gorget. And in that moment, blinded by his anger, Cordoba forgot himself. He looked at the demon, he met its sunken eyes, and found himself frozen too. He could have taken its head off there and then, or shot it through its throat. But he couldn't move a muscle, even flex his trigger finger. The demon's gaze, red, unblinking, burnt into Cordoba's very soul, and that itch in his brain became a trip hammer, thumping, growing, and growing until he thought his head might burst. The demon was inside his head. It was whispering to him. Dark, blasphemous catechisms that his ears couldn't hear, but that curdled his blood. And it had taken his brain in its gnarled black claws, and it was squeezing it. And all Cordoba could see were its eyes, those blazing red pits of fire. Then the demon shrieked, and in a flurry of wings it was gone. Cordoba blinked as if waking from a dream. A fuzzy pink blob hovered in front of him. As his eyes found focus once more, it resolved itself into Sergeant Esteban's flushed face.
I only nicked it.
Cordoba saw that his chainsword was dripping with black, stinking ichor.
It will be back.
Menendez could not be brought round. He was like the other four, the four who had already fallen today. His pulse still beat, albeit slowly. His lungs still drew shallow breath. But his eyes... his eyes stared, glassy, straight up. His body was still functioning, sustained by the superior gene seed of the Primarch Rogal Dawn. But it was only a shell now. Menendez was gone. His soul had been devoured. Cordoba lowered his head as Esteban crouched by their fallen battle brother, mouthing a prayer for him to the all-seeing Emperor and closing those staring eyes. They stood then, the two of them, the survivors, and they raised their fists in silent salute to each other. The gauntlets on their left hands were red, so that in this gesture they each mimicked the symbol of their proud chapter. They were bloodied, but unbowed.
Their gene seed can still be harvested.
If only the brother apothecary had not fallen.
He'd been the demon's first victim. They'd found him in his bunk that morning.
We must protect them, their bodies, until help can reach us.
Cordoba reached out, scraping a gobbet of black blood from the wall.
We have a trail to follow this time.
Esteban placed a hand on his shoulder, holding him back.
Not yet.
We should press our advantage, Sergeant. The demon will be...
The demon is stronger than we are, Brother Cordoba. It is no weakness to admit this.
Esteban had ever been the cautious one. That was how he'd earned his rank, though Cordoba might have been considered the more natural leader, because such caution was a quality valued above all by the Crimson Fists.
You wounded the demon. We may be only two now, but we know we can hurt it. It can be destroyed.
We've already lost five brothers in the trying.
It cannot be allowed to leave the monastery. If it learns of the world outside, if it preys upon the cave people...
Esteban snapped.
I am aware of the dangers, Cordoba. I've given 3 years of my life to this world, as have you. I believe its offspring are the future of our chapter. That the blood of our Primarch will one day fuel their hearts.
Then we cannot leave them to the slaughter.
And I have no intention of so doing. But before we face our enemy again, we must seek some advantage we can use against it.
What advantage can we have? We're really...
You said there are two of us. Two survivors of this benighted squad of ours. By my count, there are three.
You can't mean...
Cordoba felt his top lip curling into a sneer.
There is no one else.
Suarez, the stinking mutant, the traitor.
He has been trained to fight the creatures of the warp.
It is because of him we face this peril. It's because of Suarez that our brothers have fallen. It was Suarez who brought this demon to our door.
You may be right, but I fear only he can save us now.
They descended to the caverns beneath the monastery. The steps were narrow and steep, carved out long ago by men of lesser bulk and weight by far than these armored giants, and they had to tread carefully. A handful of servitors lurked in the shadows. They were probably down here hunting the small, hairy vermin that served as the primary food source on this world. The librarian was chained in a tapered alcove. He appeared to be sleeping, but fitfully, his eyelids twitching and the occasional moan escaping from his throat. His blonde hair was plastered to his forehead by sweat. Despite his 10 days in captivity, Suarez's chin was still smooth. Cordoba had forgotten how young he was. Suarez had been stripped of his armor. In its place, he wore the pain glove, a black skin suit that could subject his every nerve to excruciating torture. Esteban stooped beside the boy and shook him awake. His red-rimmed eyes opened, and immediately Cordoba could see that the madness in them was undimmed. Suarez screamed and released a torrent of gibberish. He lunged for his sergeant's throat as if somehow with his bare hands he could choke him through his armor. He was brought up short by his chains, and Esteban delivered a backhanded slap to the librarian's face with his left gauntlet, stilling his tongue. Suarez's eyes cleared.
Please, Sergeant Esteban, please, I need the glove. You must turn on the glove again. The pain, I need...
Esteban shook his head. He began to unlock Suarez's manacles.
Sergeant!
We have no choice.
I need the pain. I need it to focus without
it. Who do you think you are? The Primarch himself? You think you can endure the glove as long as he did before your nerves are fried?
The demons, Sergeant Esteban, they're out there searching for me, circling
waiting. I can hear them in my mind, whispering, always whispering.
Your demons aren't out there. They're here. They're in here with us, and they're picking us off one by one, thanks to you. You can hear them too. That can't be. They can't.
There is a demon here.
Esteban stripped the pain glove from the boy's pale, trembling form.
In the monastery. It must have slipped through somehow into this realm. Only we three remain. We need you, Suarez.
No! You must leave me down here. Don't let it find me.
We need you sound of mind. We need you strong. For the Emperor. There is only the Emperor. Say it, Lexicanum Suarez. Recite the creed with me. There is only the Emperor. Say it!
He is our shield. Our shield and our...
Our shield and our protector.
This is futile. You only need look at the boy to see it. Chaos has claimed his mind. Only death can release him now.
Esteban ignored his protest. He hauled Suarez up, tucked him under his massive left arm, and carried him back to the steps. The librarian kicked and squirmed at first, but soon gave up and hung limply in his sergeant's firm hold. Cordoba wanted to argue further, but he held his tongue. The decision had been made, and he knew better than to question it twice. His chapter used the pain glove only sparingly. Unlike their imperial fist cousins, they saw no need to suffer to prove their piety. But he had felt its embrace once, and had no wish to endure it again. He was full of foreboding, however, as he followed Sergeant Esteban and his listless burden back into the monastery proper. Ten days ago, Suarez had turned on his brethren. Cordoba had not been present at the time. He had been in the caves, training a promising group of candidates. He had heard it said, however, that the librarian had snapped in an instant and fought with a strength surprising for his age. It had taken three of his battle brothers to restrain him, and even then he had struggled and cursed all the way down to the caverns. Cordoba was almost sorry to have missed it. He had not seen real combat in 3 years, not since Esteban had brought him to this emperor-damned rock to teach him patience. And of course, he had predicted this turn of events almost from the start. He had never trusted Suarez. The boy's mutation may not have been external, but this made him no less a mutant in Cordoba's eyes. He ought to have been executed for lashing out as he had, for the heresies he had voiced. In another chapter, he might have been, and Cordoba would have fired the killing shot gladly. Sergeant Esteban, however, had other ideas. The Crimson Fists, he had reminded his squad, were a depleted force, struggling for survival since the war against the foul orc Snagrod. They could ill afford to lose even one man, nor let it be suspected that their gene seed was corrupted. Esteban had been adamant that Suarez could be saved. As far as Cordoba was concerned, they were all now facing the consequences of that folly. Suarez would betray them again. Of this he had no doubt. Even if he could be overcome a second time, it was almost certain that the demon he had conjured could not be. Then, through his misguided attempt to save just one, Sergeant Esteban would have lost an entire squad of Crimson Fists, and most likely, a world as well.
It is close.
Suarez had stiffened in Esteban's arms. The sergeant let him stand and the young librarian shuffled forwards, his hands outstretched as if to pluck something from the air. His eyes were round and milk white. They reminded Cordoba of Menendez's eyes after the demon had taken him, staring without seeing. Or rather, perhaps, seeing something beyond the sight of most men's eyes.
I can feel it.
Suarez was more lucid now.
The demon, its mind brushed against mine. I can feel... It is hurt, but far from beaten, fed, but far from sated. It knows there is yet finer fare to be had here.
Can you find it? Can you lead us to it?
Suarez shook his head. I dare not. I can sense the demon's presence in this realm, in this building, but I... It senses me too. I dare not focus too closely upon it. Must keep my mind closed to it, lest it... They had decided to cut through the chapel. It was better illuminated than the passageways, and even had the demon been waiting in the shadows, still it would have had to cross bright candlelight to reach the three of them as they traversed the nave. It lifted their spirits, too, to see this holy place. Cordoba and Sergeant Esteban had made the sign of the Aquila before the velvet-draped altar, and Cordoba had nodded with grudging approval as Suarez did the same. Each time it is killed, the demon has retreated for a short time after. It could be that feeding makes it weak. If Suarez can indeed find it, he should do so now before it can regain its strength.
We are weakened too. We can use this reprieve to get Suarez upstairs, get him back into his armor, fit to fight.
Is that wise, Sergeant? The last time he wore that armor, he...
Esteban silenced Cordoba with a glare. He looked as if he was about to follow this up with a few choice words when suddenly Suarez jerked as if struck. His hands flew to his head and his legs collapsed beneath him. Esteban rushed to his side and caught him as he fell.
It knows. It knows.
What, Suarez? What does it know? Talk to me.
It is whispering to me.
What does it say? Can you hear it?
The demon hungers. It has the scent of power, and it desires that taste above all else. My barriers cannot long stand against it. It is coming for us.
Coming here? To the chapel, you mean?
It is coming for me.
They could get little sense out of Suarez after that. Esteban had to carry him again to his first-floor dormitorium, which they reached without incident. The demon must still have been resting somewhere, digesting. Cordoba was instructed to stand guard in the hallway, which suited him well. Even before, he had often taken pains to avoid Suarez's company. His presence made Cordoba's brain itch. The same itch, he realized now, that the demon had caused in him. And this was a welcome respite from it. Still, he kept a part of his lyman's ear trained upon the room behind him, through the heavy wooden door. Behind that door, Sergeant Esteban was sealing Suarez back into his deep blue and crimson armor, rearming him. Cordoba couldn't shake the feeling that this was just what Suarez had been waiting for. In the event, the first warning sound came from rather closer to hand. Cordoba stepped back, snapped up his bolter, aimed it at the roof beam above his head, the beam that had just creaked with what sounded like the weight of a body upon it. Only there was nothing there. Cordoba span around to check that the demon wasn't trying to misdirect him, wasn't stealing up behind him. Lightning flashed behind a narrow window. A gust of wind drove flecks of rain through a crack in the red stained glass, and a torch flame in the hallway guttered and almost died. Cordoba cursed his own imaginings and returned to his post. A moment later, lightning flashed again, and this time he was certain. A shadow on the floorboards at his feet. It had been visible for only a split second. Long enough. Cordoba knew that shape, knew it like a genetic memory of danger. The demon was at the end of the hallway, at the top of the grand staircase, watching him. He couldn't see it yet, but it was there. Cordoba's brain was itching again. He knew he should have alerted Sergeant Esteban, but the shout died in his throat, stifled by the thought that Suarez would hear it too. Perhaps the demon didn't know the lightning had betrayed it. As Cordoba stalked towards it, he thought that perhaps it might remain in its hiding place, seeing him coming but secure in its invisibility. Perhaps he could take it by surprise and slay it without the untrustworthy librarian even having to become involved. The demon had to be clinging to the far side of the balustrade. Cordoba searched for it with the corners of his eyes, not wanting to meet its gaze again. He saw a shape, a twitch of movement, and fired. The balustrade was destroyed by his first bolt, but Cordoba continued to strafe the wall behind it to be sure. The hallway was filled with smoke and dust. He strode through this cloud to where the demon had been. He looked over a precipice to the floor below and cursed under his breath. There was no corpse down there. A flutter of wings to his left. Cordoba snapped around, saw the demon flying at him. He met it with a chainsword swipe, was sure he had sliced it in two, but impossibly the creature kept coming. He felt its claws raking his cheek, its wings in his hair, but it was gone before Cordoba could grasp it. He turned, sent another volley of bolts blazing after it, but again the demon had disappeared. Something shifted behind him in the hallway. Cordoba turned, almost squeezed his trigger again, stopped himself in time. Sergeant Esteban approached him warily, his own bolter raised.
What the hell are you doing? Lower your weapons, Brother Cordoba. That's an order.
The demon. Didn't you see the demon?
There was nothing here.
I saw it. I felt its breath on my skin and its claws tearing at my flesh. If I'd have been able to lay my hands on the foul thing, I could have...
I was watching you. You were fighting your own shadow.
No. Cordoba wiped a hand across his stinging cheek, but was frustrated to find it dry. He tore off a gauntlet, felt it again with his bare fingers. There was no blood. No scar.
How many days since you slept?
Suarez is the mad one, not me. I know what I saw.
The demon can trick your mind. It can fool your senses.
Cordoba almost didn't recognize this new voice at first, this strong, confident voice.
That is why you found it so elusive. It can make you believe it is in one place when in fact it is in another. It can ensure that nothing is as it seems. A figure had stepped out into the hallway behind Esteban. Clad in his own armor again, wielding his own chainsword and bolter, a renewed sense of purpose gleaming in his eyes, Suarez looked like a lost boy no longer. He looked like a crimson fist. They returned to the passageway by the cloisters where Menendez's body lay, to follow the blood trail from there. Where the demon was last sighted, Sergeant Esteban had said, and Cordoba had resented the implication in his words. The trail led up a back staircase, but turned off before the first floor dormitoriums, and thus quashed Cordoba's brief hope of redemption. They lost it for a time outside the barricaded room that served as the Crimson Fist's armory, until Esteban saw a congealed black stain on a roof beam, and they moved on. Suarez was muttering to himself, more gibberish so far as Cordoba could discern. He had his lyman's ear tune out the sound, but somehow the words still found their way into his head. Whispering, itching. Could stand it no longer, and he seized Suarez by the arm, halting him in his tracks, and demanded he be silent. Couldn't you hear him? He asked of Esteban. Laying curses against the Golden Throne itself, offering prayers to the ruinous powers. Suarez kept his eyes downcast, his jaw set in concentration. Calmly, he explained himself. I was reciting the mantras I was taught to strengthen my mind.
Can't you see how he seeks to deceive us?
Right now, Brother Cordoba, I trust Suarez more than I can trust.